Freya, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Hopes rise for an end to violence in Syria. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says world leaders meeting in Munich have agreed to a nationwide cessation of hostilities in Syria to begin in 1 week.
We have also established a task force under the auspices of the UN and co-chaired by Russia and the United States. And over the coming week, this group will work to develop the modalities for a long-term, comprehensive, and durable cessation of violence, of hostilities.
Kerry told reporters that the cessation of hostilities will not apply to terrorist groups, including Islamic State, al-Nusra, and others, which could still come under attack. The group in Munich also agreed to accelerate and expand the delivery of humanitarian assistance to Syria. A United Nations task force will oversee aid delivery. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter said Thursday the NATO alliance may become a member of the U.S.-led coalition fighting the Islamic State group. Carter told reporters at a meeting of more than two dozen defense ministers in Brussels that NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg was exploring such a possibility. Carter said NATO could bring the alliance's experience in building partner capacity and training ground forces. All of NATO's 28 member states are already in the anti-Islamic State alliance. South Sudan's president Salva Kiir has reappointed his rival Riek Machar as vice president. That appears aimed at ending the country's civil war and fulfills a condition of a peace agreement reached in August. It basically restores the presidency to where it was before the fighting erupted. This is VOA News. Brazil has announced an agreement with a U.S. university to develop a vaccine against the Zika virus within 12 months. At a news conference Thursday, the health minister of Brazil said his government will invest $1.9 million toward the partnership between the University of Texas and Brazil's Evandro Chagas Institute over the next 5 years. The two Democratic U.S. presidential candidates, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, are holding another debate at this hour. This one's from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in the Midwest. Clinton opened Thursday's debate by saying she wants to knock down all barriers she says hold Americans back. And Sanders said the federal government has a moral responsibility to play a role in making sure people have a higher standard of living. The head of the Russian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Kirill, has arrived in Cuba for a state visit. He's also there for an historic meeting with Pope Francis. The Friday meeting is the first of its kind. Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy have been divided for about 1,000 years. The two Christian leaders plan to sign a joint declaration, but details of that have not been made public. Ugandan opposition candidate Kizza Besigye says he fears voter bribery could be one of the obstacles to his winning the February 18th election. Besigye has run against President Yoweri Museveni in 3 previous elections. Besigye said his campaign has enjoyed popular support throughout the country and that only voter intimidation and bribery on Election Day could deny him a victory. A senior pastor at a church in Hangzhou, China, has been replaced and put under investigation for embezzlement, adding to fears of a growing crackdown on Christianity in China. Shannon Van Zandt reports.
Late last month, police detained leading pastor Li Guangzhong and his wife. Their arrest followed the detention of Gu Yuexi and his wife. Gu was the senior pastor of the 10,000-member Chongyi Church, the largest government-approved Protestant church in China. Prior to his detention, China's state-approved religious groups, the Three Self-Patriotic Movement and the China Christian Council, forcibly removed Gu from his post, with authorities saying he is being investigated for corruption. The arrests come against the backdrop of an ongoing campaign against Christian crosses in Zhejiang. Shannon Van Sant, Hong Kong.
More than 100 members of parliament from Southeast Asian nations are urging President Barack Obama to address regional human rights issues during his meetings with ASEAN leaders next week. The request came in an open letter posted online Thursday. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, February 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan President Salva Kiir appoints his arch rival and rebel leader as the country's first vice president.
I first want to thank the president for taking this bold step. I think it is a good step in the right direction in the implementation of the agreement, in bringing about peace, in bringing about political stability to the country.
That's former South Sudan Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar. The U.S. expresses disappointment in Russia for blocking a Security Council resolution to expand sanctions on Sudan. U.S. and Ivory Coast officials discuss development spending. And after Ebola, Sierra Leone women are warned about the Zika virus.
What we just have is like this briefing to say, okay, this is what the Zika virus is, this is what is known about it, this is where it is.
Ofuoma Festus Omo Obi is the country director for the Marie Stopes Family Planning Organization. About 3 million Zimbabweans are feeling the impact of El Nino and working to conserve Guinea-Bissau's biodiversity. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir on Thursday appointed his arch-rival and rebel leader Riek Machar as the country's first vice president, in line with the peace agreement signed last August to end 2 years of fighting, which erupted in 2013 because of power struggle between the two leaders. Speaking to VOA from the Egyptian capital Cairo, Machar welcomed his appointment, saying it is a good step in the right direction toward the implementation of the peace agreement and bringing about political stability in South Sudan. Machar says the next step now is to move quickly to complete the formation of the transitional government of national unity.
I first want to thank the president for taking this bold step so that the agreement can be implemented. And my feeling is that we have no way out except to implement the agreement. The next step that we need to take is to ensure that the forces in Juba, their levels are reduced, which will remain only the stipulated forces in the peace agreement. I think it is a good step in the right direction in the implementation of the agreement, in bringing about peace, in bringing about political stability to the country.
Listening to you, it looks like the SPLM in opposition, that is your group, has a long list of things that they want to do for the people of South Sudan. What is your first priority? If you go back to Juba,
priority before formation of the government is to ensure that peace prevails in the country. Once we form the transitional government of national unity, we should ensure that there is political stability, this peace together. That is the first thing. And then we start the process of persuading our people to reconcile among themselves.
It seems like you want to do a lot. Where would you get the money from?
The money which was used for fighting the war will be turned into doing these activities. The money which has been also used for humanitarian, some of it will help activities that I'm talking about. I believe that the goodwill of the international community will come. We will propagate in the international community to assist South Sudan to rise from the ashes of this war.
I'm sure this appointment did not come to you as a surprise. You must be communicating with President Kiir. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It came as a surprise. I did not expect it today. Since I heard the appointment, I have contacted President Salva twice this evening. I didn't make it through. I hope I will make it through. So now we are at a serious situation. We must ensure that the troops reach Juba as soon as possible so that I can go to Juba and then take up my responsibilities and the country moves forward in a conducive atmosphere.
You're talking about a conducive atmosphere, and at the same time, you are not seeing each other eye to eye with President Kiir on the issue of the 28 states. How are you going to ensure that the environment is conducive for you and President Kiir to work together?
Well, I haven't said we don't see eye to eye with President Salva Kiir. What I'm saying, yes, the issue of 28 states is an obstacle obstacle. There's been an obstacle towards implementation of the agreement, particularly in drafting an agreed constitution, transitional constitution. As you know, that the IGAD Council of Ministers said on the 30th to the 31st, they have given us a roadmap, and we're given 1 month to discuss the number of states in South Sudan. If we fail to agree, then we revert to the agreement. The agreement says 10 states.
Riek Machar is the former South Sudan vice president and rebel leader. He was speaking from the Egyptian capital, Cairo, with John Tanza, VOA South Sudan in Focus program. The United States says it is disappointed in Russia's decision to block a UN Security Council resolution to expand sanctions against Sudan. Russia's decision comes after the UN's Sudan Sanctions Committee's panel of experts linked gold trafficking and other minerals to violence and instability in Darfur. Ayan Bio reports from Washington.
While welcoming the resolution to extend the mandate of the UN's Sudan Sanctions Panel of Experts, calling it a technical rollover, Ambassador Samantha Power, U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, also criticized the Council's inability to address the role that gold plays in Sudan. After losing major oil revenues to South Sudan when it became a country in 2011, gold has become a large source of revenue for Sudan. But Power says Sudan's gold mining involves illegal activity.
We are particularly concerned that the Council was unable to address the role of illicit trafficking in natural resources in fueling conflict. The nexus between gold trafficking and armed groups, as outlined by the panel of experts, is very well known. This Council has addressed without controversy the role of gold and natural resources in other conflicts.
Sanctions against Sudan have been in place for 12 years, and an arms embargo has been in place for 11 years. The UN formed a panel of experts to report on the humanitarian violations in Darfur. Power says the panel exposed numerous and recurring violations of humanitarian and human rights laws.
And yet when they do, a member of this council blocks the report from being published because its findings are so disturbing. Today's resolution is a technical rollover. Not because the panel of experts did not provide findings on how to respond better to the situation.
A 2015 report by the Washington-based NGO, The Enough Project, says Sudan has more than 1,000 tons of gold reserves scattered across the country, including Darfur, South Kordofan, and the Blue Nile, all of which are conflict areas. That same report says Sudan is the 12th largest gold producer in the world and the third in Africa. Many organizations, including the Enough Project, have pressured the UN to draft legislation that would restrict trade with Sudan. Power says it's time that happens.
Today, the Council should have built upon the excellent international and regional initiatives underway in this field to tackle this problem in the Sudan context. But because of the panel's reporting on this issue, a panel's report may never become public.
According to the Enough Project, the UN panel of experts recommended in their unpublished report that more sanctions be imposed on Sudan because gold and the mining of natural resources fuel the conflict in Darfur. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Zimbabwe's government this week launched a $1.5 billion international appeal for assistance to avert hunger, but some parts of the country are already feeling the pinch of the El Nino weather phenomena. Sebastian Mofu has been to some of the hardest hit areas and filed this report from Harare.
Chivi District in Mashingo Province, about 350 kilometers south of Harare, is one of the areas hard hit by hunger in Zimbabwe. Here in Madzivadondo village, the land is dry. Nothing is green. There are no crops, although it is supposed to be the growing season. Cattle and other domestic animals, those still alive, look hungry and hopeless as the villagers. 85-year-old Ramek Madzivadondo says he has never seen things this bad. He says there used to be hunger, but never like this. He says his cattle have all died and there is nowhere around where there is hope. People are suffering. There is nothing to eat, he says. There is nothing. Zimbabwe Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa says there are actually 3 million people in Madzivadondo's predicament, going for days without anything to eat. Zimbabwe's appeal was made to the United Nations and other international organizations such as USAID. Bishop Parajuli, the UN resident coordinator in Zimbabwe, said the world body was already providing aid before the latest appeal came in.
So far, about 60 million was mobilized. Close to a million people are being reached with food support. Now, given the new challenge in terms of doubling of this affected population, the need is almost doubled. So we really need to revamp. Sadly, the situation is bad in the whole continent. Recently, Ethiopia came in a big way saying that they have over 10 million people affected.
According to the Famine Early Warning Systems Network, a provider of early warning and analysis on food insecurity, El Nino has led to drier than average conditions in some parts of the Horn of Africa, such as Ethiopia and in Southern Africa, affecting countries like Zimbabwe, Malawi, Lesotho, Zambia, Swaziland, South Africa, and Mozambique. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Friday, February 12th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Sierra Leone is just catching its breath from the Ebola outbreak, which killed nearly 4,000 people in the country. But one health organization wants people also to be prepared for the Zika virus. Nina DeVries has more from Freetown.
Sierra Leone's last known Ebola case was released from the hospital this week, but authorities have yet to locate about 40 contacts who may be carrying the virus. So while Ebola is still the country's biggest concern, Ufuma Festus Omoabi, country director of the Mary Stopes Family Planning Organization, says Sierra Leone should be ready for Zika too. Zika itself is not life-threatening, but the latest outbreak originating in Brazil shows it might lead to microcephaly, a birth defect that leaves babies with smaller than normal heads. Omoabi says the Stopes organization is now talking to pregnant women about the threat posed by Zika.
What we just have is like this briefing to say, okay, this is what the Zika virus is, this is what is known about it, this is where it is.
He adds that making abortion legal in Sierra Leone is more crucial now due to the threat of birth defects. A bill to legalize abortion was recently passed by Parliament but has not yet been signed by President Ernest Bai Koroma, as religious leaders have raised concerns about it.
Let people have access to safe abortion, not unsafe abortion, because as we know, any woman will terminate a pregnancy if she feels that that pregnancy is going to be offer her health risk and long-term disability.
World Health Organization spokesperson Eva Kalando says the WHO is talking with local officials about ways to increase awareness of Zika and provide support. Because Africa has the highest prevalence of malaria in the world, she says, people are familiar with mosquito-borne diseases.
Therefore, people know how to protect themselves against malaria. They know how to clean the areas around them because, you know, there's cholera, there's malaria, which is endemic already on much of our continent. Mm-hmm. So, and that much of that knowledge and that that actions that people are already taking is part of the protection should Zika become a threat.
News reports say at least 100 pregnant women have contracted the Zika virus on Cape Verde off the coast of West Africa, but so far no reports of Zika on the mainland. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
A delegation of the U.S. Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC, is in Ivory Coast to discuss implementation of a major grant designed to fight poverty and boost economic growth in the country. Emily Yop reports from Abidjan.
5 years after post-election violence swept Ivory Coast, the country is eligible for a compact grant from the Millennium Challenge Corporation, a U.S. foreign aid agency. The grant is seen as another sign that foreign partners have regained confidence in Ivory Coast, whose economy has rebounded by 9% annually since 2012. Cameron Khan is the vice president of the Department of Compact Operations at the MCC. He said Wednesday that Ivory Coast passed 13 out of the 20 indicators to be eligible.
The board's decision was based on the progress Cote d'Ivoire has made for the last few years. The establishment of democratic principles and institutions and stabilization of political situation in the country. Economic growth and improvements on a host of indicators.
Last year, Ivory Coast was declared eligible for a smaller grant from the MCC, called a threshold, and is now graduating to a compact grant, becoming the 10th country in West Africa to do so. The average size of a compact grant is between $300 and $350 million over a five-year period and aims to eliminate constraints to economic growth through investment, infrastructure building, and policy reforms. In Ivory Coast, four main constraints have been identified related to transportation, tax burdens, the need for more industrial land, and technical skills among the population. Khan said one focus is to avoid corruptions and make sure the money gets where it meant to go. He said the MCC tightly monitors the progress made.
We have extremely high standards for accountability with respect to financial management and other matters. So we will be holding our counterparts here in the government accountable, just as we hold ourselves accountable. A country, after it becomes eligible, still needs to pass those indicators. And if they don't, then our legislative structure allows us to suspend compact.
Malawi was one of the countries that had its grant briefly suspended in 2012 after a breach of the MCC's criteria for democratic governance. It was reinstated a few months later. Emilia from VOA News in Abidjan.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with cricket. Namibia beat Nepal by 15 runs in the seventh-place playoff at the ICC Under-19 Cricket World Cup in Fatula in Bangladesh on Thursday. Today, Friday, Zimbabwe play Afghanistan in the final of the plate category as South Africa engage New Zealand in the 11th-place playoff in Cox Bazar. In football, Mexico beat Senegal 2-0 in a friendly match in Miami, Florida State in the United States of America. In volleyball, Uganda challenge Egypt. Algeria play Botswana as hosts Cameroon engage Tunisia at the start of the week-long Africa Women's Volleyball Olympic qualifier in Yaounde today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Botswana challenge Egypt as Uganda face Algeria. Turning to athletics, Kenyan World Cross Country Championship gold and silver medalists Geoffrey Kamoror and Bedan Karoki face off at the IWF Cross Country Permit meet in Nairobi, Kenya tomorrow, Saturday. The contest doubles up as Kenya's national championships. Athletics Kenya will use the event to select their team to defend their crowns at the IWF World Half Marathon Championship and the Africa Cross Country Championships next month. In Tunisia, the Arab Cross Country Championship takes place in Hammamet, some 70 kilometers southeast of the Tunisian capital Tunis, on Sunday. In Spain, Eritrea's 20-year-old world marathon champion Guirmé Ghebreselassie is at the draw card at the Barcelona Half Marathon on Sunday. This will be his first race since he won the marathon at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China last year. In boxing, Ghana's Raymond Komi fights China's Yun Kui Xiao in a World Boxing Association International Super Bantamweight bout in Guangzhou, some 2,200 kilometers south of the Chinese capital Beijing today, Friday. Finally, the two-day International Table Tennis Federation Africa Top 16 Cup gets underway in Khartoum, Sudan on Sunday. Winners of the men's and women's crowns automatically qualify for the ITTF World Cup later this year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 12th. On this day, 1909, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, was founded. The NAACP is the oldest and largest U.S. civil rights organization. Its main goal is to bring about social, political, and economic equality for black people. Also, on this day, 1809, Abraham Lincoln was born in Hudgenville, Kentucky. Lincoln was the 16th president of the United States. In 1863, 2 years after the U.S. Civil War started, he issued the Emancipation Proclamation to free black slaves in some southern states. Slavery was one of the causes of the U.S. Civil War. On this day, in 1900, African-American poet James Weldon Johnson wrote the lyrics for Lift Every Voice and Sing in celebration of President Abraham Lincoln. Americans' birthday. The poem deals with the African-American experience and tells them to keep fighting for freedom. It will later become known as the Black National Anthem. On this day in 1934, retired American professional basketball player William Felton Bill Russell was born in West Monroe, Louisiana. He played for the Boston Celtics of the National Basketball Association, NBA, from 1956 to 1969. A five-time NBA Most Valuable Player, Russell was the centerpiece of the Celtics dynasty, winning 11 NBA championships during his 13-year career. Along with Henry Richer of the National Hockey League's Montreal Canadiens, Russell holds the record for the most championships won by an athlete in a North American sports league. And on this day in African history, 1961, Congolese leader Patrice Emery Lumumba became a Pan-Africanist martyr following his murder by Moise Kapenda Shombi's forces in Elizabethville, which is today Lumumbashi. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 12th. Congratulations to Mambotswana Mzingwani of Orapa in Botswana, Samson Kolan of New Tafo in Eastern Region of Ghana, and Ambrose Agio of Makurdi in Benue State, Nigeria. You are the winners of our February 11th question. Who started the idea of Black History Month celebration in the United States? The answer, Dr. Carter G. Woodson. Now, here is our question for today, February 12th. Which Virginia slave packaged himself to freedom in a wooden box? Once again, which Virginia slave packaged himself to freedom in a wooden box? Send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. That's it for this Friday, February 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the Uganda presidential elections with Shaka Sali in Uganda and me, Esther Gidu Yort, as the studio guest host. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, rumors. Millions are paid to athletes, singers and actors for their work. Celebrities, do they earn too much money? Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing rumors. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk, comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.